This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Last week, President Joe Biden announced he's directing states to make all adults eligible for vaccinations by May 1st. But so far, scarcity has forced states to make difficult choices about who is and who is not eligible for vaccination. And those rules and the rollout, often complicated and difficult to navigate, have left many people frustrated. And while the vaccine has given us collective hope that the pandemic will someday come to an end, and perhaps sooner than later, it has also given rise to other emotional responses. The rules, unequal access, vaccine hesitancy, stereotypes about what illness looks like, and the tension, if it exists, between equitable distribution on the one hand and the imperative to vaccinate as many people as quickly as possible on the other, all that can breed guilt and envy, shame and judgment. As confusing as it can be to navigate the process of getting a vaccine, it can be just as challenging to navigate the spectrum of feelings and emotions that come along with us. Joining us now to discuss this are Dr. Shika Jain. She is an assistant professor of medicine at the University of Illinois at Chicago and co-founder and chief operating officer of IMPACT, an organization that's working to improve equitable distribution of vaccines. Dr. Jain, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also with us is Nancy Berlinger. She is a research scholar at the Hastings Center, a bioethics research institute based in Garrison, New York. She's also lead author of the Hastings Center's Ethical Framework for Healthcare Institutions Responding to COVID-19, including guidance for policymakers on vaccine allocation, and is involved in research on COVID-19 vaccination in community health centers. Nancy, thank you for joining us as well. And finally, with us once again is Cynthia Lubin-Langtu. She has a PhD in psychology and is a professor in the Department of Clinical Psychology at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. Cynthia, thank you again for coming back on the 21st.
Great to be back with you, Brian.
So I want to begin with you. You're a medical doctor, but you also have an organization called IMPACT, as I mentioned, which is working to improve equitable distribution of vaccines. Can you talk about these seemingly competing forces? On the one hand, the need to make vaccine access equitable and fair, and on the other hand, the need to get shots in as many arms as quickly as possible.
Absolutely. And it's such an important point, and it's really been a challenge. You know, we're in a time right now that's different than anyone else has ever had to deal with when it comes to trying to get as many vaccines into arms as quickly as possible, but then realizing many of the people who are in communities that are the hardest hit or are really suffering the most from this pandemic are those communities that don't necessarily have easy access to the vaccine. It was hard at the beginning to sign up. It's still sometimes hard to sign up. And so while we wanted to get vaccines into as many arms as possible, as quickly as possible, we also wanted to make sure that we were targeting our most vulnerable populations. And it's been a real challenge where we've been trying to go as fast as we can, but we are seeing that there's not as much of an equitable distribution as we would like. And there's a lot of different forces that I think all interact that result in this outcome. And I know that across Illinois and across the country, there have been a lot of efforts put in place to try to make a more equitable distribution process. But because of some of the challenges I'm sure we'll talk about today, that hasn't always been possible. And people have described this vaccine rollout as the Hunger Games or as almost trying to sign up for concert tickets where it's been first come, first serve. So it's been really challenging to make sure that we're distributing efficiently and equitably.
Well, right. And I mean, there's this sense that maybe people who are eligible shouldn't be, or that, you know, people who are less technologically or socially savvy are being left behind. Other people maybe are gaming the system and quote unquote skipping the line. I mean, these are important considerations with regard to vaccine equity, Dr. Jain. Yet there's also this competing message telling us if you're eligible and can get the shot, just get it. From the perspective of a doctor, what do you want people to think about when it comes to getting a vaccine?
So if you're eligible to get it and you can get it, I say absolutely, no questions asked. You should absolutely get the vaccine. I've actually had people who reached out to me who aren't eligible, but they found out about leftover doses or doses that were going to be thrown away. And they were feeling guilty saying, well, it's not really my turn, but if I don't take this vaccine, then it might get tossed and then no one will get it. And in those situations, I advise people, listen, if you aren't actively trying to skip the line, if you aren't trying to push somebody else out of their place, but you have the opportunity to get the vaccine, then I still think that you should get that vaccine into your arm. Because while we absolutely need to focus on equity and equitable distribution, we really also need to get as many people vaccinated as quickly as we can. So, you know, there are those people who feel guilt and they say, oh, I know people who are sicker than me or people who are older than me, and I don't feel like it's my turn, but I'm technically in this category where I could get my shot. I still recommend that they get their shot, because really what you're doing is you're not only protecting yourself, you're also working towards this herd immunity by protecting yourself and preventing yourself from spreading COVID to other people. So even though you might feel guilty that there's other people who might deserve it more than me or who might need it more than me, even though those people might need it more than you, you are actually helping overall in the public health sense by getting your vaccine, because you're now preventing yourself from potentially spreading it to others as well.
Nancy, can you talk about that from a bioethics perspective, this idea of a tension between equitable distribution and efficient distribution?
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree with Dr. Jane that effectiveness and equity go together. Equity is reducing vulnerability. Effectiveness isn't just speed. And we have to be really careful that we don't like see a word like effectiveness and say speed or efficiency. Speed works for privileged people, basically healthy people who can navigate registration systems and have transportation to a vaccination site. That is not the entire U.S. population. It's not the entire Illinois population. The people who are being prioritized for vaccination right now tend to be older or people with chronic health conditions. I've had the experience of accompanying my mother to her vaccination. She's 86 years old. And everyone online, many people had walkers or canes, but there was something that there was a really good reason why people needed help with the process. And so we have to remember that we can't just help the healthy and digitally savvy among us. That's why you see the emergence of vaccine navigators, who are volunteers who are helping people navigate sometimes very confusing processes. So we don't get to our ultimate goal of herd immunity or community immunity, as it's sometimes called, if we're not thinking about equity at every stage of the allocation process.
And Cynthia Lubin-Langtoo, just briefly before we need to take a break in about a minute, but can you talk about this idea of, we were hearing about people maybe feeling guilty for getting an opportunity to get a vaccine when they are not in one of the, you know, targeted groups, the 1A or 1B group that is eligible at this time?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think that sense of feeling guilty and jumping the line is one that's really important. And I think that exactly what the previous speaker said about reaching out and talking to somebody about your fear, ethically speaking, I know that I had a similar concern, and talking to my colleagues about the importance of me getting the vaccine when I could, not just for myself, but for the greater good, was a really helpful ethical conversation. And I think when folks reach out, that it will allay their fears and that sense of guilt and hopefully propel them to do so.
Okay, we need to take a quick break here. Listeners, after the break, we do want to hear from you. What feelings are you having about the vaccine? Have you felt any of this guilt or envy or frustration at seeing other people getting vaccinated? How did you feel getting vaccinated, if you've been lucky enough to do so? And if you haven't, what has been your reaction to seeing other people getting the shot? Join the conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. The number again is 800-222-9455. We're going to continue this conversation after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us. This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking about the complexities of equal and efficient or effective distribution of the vaccine and how that process can lead to feelings of guilt or shame or envy or judgment. Our guests are Dr. Shika Jain. She's an assistant professor of medicine at the University of Illinois Chicago and the co-founder of IMPACT, which is an organization working to improve equitable distribution of vaccines. We also have Nancy Berlinger with us. She's a research scholar at the Hastings Center, a bioethics research institute based in Garrison, New York. And Cynthia Lubin-Lang, too, is with us as well. She holds a PhD and is a professor in the Department of Clinical Psychology at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. And our phone lines are open at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. And Nancy, you were quoted in a recent Chicago Tribune article about some of the emotional responses people have been facing with regards to the vaccine rollout, right? Guilt, envy, right. Moral judgment on others. There's this fear of missing out or fear of missing out on behalf of your parents. What should people remember if they are feeling some of these emotions?
Oh, that's a great question. Envy, shame, and guilt are what a philosopher would call a moral emotion. These are emotions that concern how we think beyond ourselves and how we make judgments about other people. So the fact that we're even talking about vaccine envy, vaccine shaming, or a vaccine guilt suggests the strong emotions that are connected to the hope of ending the pandemic. So there's nothing wrong with having emotions, but it's when that judgment creeps in about other people or other people's behavior that it begins to be problematic. Cue jumping is wrong. It's a form of bullying. It really bothers us. It's what I think of as playground ethics. You can teach children to say, you know, wait your turn. And so when, as adults, we see people lying about their eligibility or working the system to get ahead of somebody else, we don't like it because they're elbowing somebody else out of the way. So that's something we respond to as viscerally as something that offends us. But in this moment where things are evolving so quickly and we're really moving toward having adequate supply for the entire nation, is that reducing barriers to vaccination for vulnerable people is much more important than calling out individuals who game the system or who you think may have gamed the system or arguing about who deserves to be eligible. Weight and smoking, for example, are known risk factors for severe COVID. That's why they're on the list. It's not really a good look to envy people for being exposed to greater risk of death or illness from COVID.
Yeah, interesting way to put that. All right, I want to go to the phones now. Susan is calling from Peoria on line 4. Hello, Susan. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
What is your question? I understand you're a university professor.
So I was just going to say, yes, I am. I'm a full-time professor at Western Illinois University in the state of Illinois. And right now, university and college professors are not on the list to get shots, K-12 are. I'm teaching face-to-face. I'm an artist. I'm working with students closely every day. And I was really wanting to have a shot. So I just started calling my CVS, Walgreens, and Hy-Vee every day around 6:30. See if they had any of these extra shots available until I finally got one. And that's how most of my department is getting vaccinations.
Okay. Well, thank you for the call. Yeah, this is a common story. People are sort of turning into sort of detectives or, you know, sort of setting up their own little boiler rooms of having to make phone calls and, you know, 5 tabs open on their browser at once. And, you know, there was also a recent story at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign about hundreds of coaches and professors who were getting vaccinated, thinking they were eligible when they were not. Apparently, there was a misunderstanding in the rules, which officials called ambiguous, because high school coaches and teachers were eligible. But as we just heard, higher ed coaches and teachers at the time were not. Nancy, I'm curious what you make of that and the importance of, you know, not shaming people who've gotten the vaccine if they think they're eligible.
Right. I think this goes to a point that Dr. Jain made, that if you're told you're eligible and you get vaccinated in good faith, you didn't cut in line. You didn't work the system. The early weeks, that University of Illinois case that was mentioned, dated from, I think, early February. And the early weeks of the rollout were confusing in many states. So if you're eligible, there's no cause to feel guilty, even though people do feel guilty. They have the emotions they feel. I can agree with the frustration of the caller that if you see some categories of educators eligible, but your category isn't, it can be very, very frustrating. I think all of us have teaching experience and we're all getting different kinds of messages about the eligibility and returning to classrooms and so on. So that's it. When we think about policymakers, thinking it through from the perspective of the group, the professional group, whether it's educators, who counts as an educator, are we excluding somebody we really mean to include? I think this comes up a lot with volunteers, that we rely on a lot of unpaid labor in our country. So there's a lot of people who are doing a very valuable work, but they're not employees. So we don't want to inadvertently exclude them. People who work in the home, for example, home care workers, we don't want to exclude them. So that's important that policymakers keep looking at their criteria and filling in gaps. Again, we have the supply. It's now more and more a logistics and access game. And so we want to make sure that we're not excluding anyone or that people are feeling frustrated unnecessarily.
Okay, let's take another call. We'll go to line one. Kelly is on the line from Utica. Oh, all right. I'm sorry. I'm told we lost that call. So, Dr. Jane, let me come back to you then. In a lot of places where people go to get the vaccine, you're asked for an ID, maybe health insurance card or a pay stub, but you are not asked for proof of a pre-existing condition. Healthcare workers and public health officials aren't asking these questions, but maybe friends and coworkers are. And I wonder what does that say, right? When you see a friend of yours on Instagram, I think a lot of us maybe have had this experience. And you think, huh, I wonder what they've got. Or like, why are they getting the shot when I'm not? You know, can you talk about this, you know, where that shaming is coming from, or this pressure to sort of, when people maybe themselves feel like pressure from their friends to explain why they qualify for the vaccine?
Absolutely. And I want to remind everybody, you know, we don't know the stories of the people who are getting the shots. You don't know why someone was eligible and why you aren't. They might be a caregiver to an elderly family member who has cancer. They might be somebody who has a chronic condition that you don't know about. There's a lot of things that many people do not share publicly or on social media. So I want to remind people that it doesn't help to shame people who are getting these shots online unless they're bragging about doing something that is obviously unethical. And then I wouldn't, again, recommend shaming them, but then I'm sure your perception will change in how you're viewing their posts. But I think it's just really important, especially in this time that we're living in, we need to give everybody the benefit of the doubt and cut people some slack, because everybody just wants to do what they think is going to protect them and protect their loved ones. And so when people are getting these shots, hopefully they're not cutting the line or doing something unethical, but you really don't know where they're coming from. And I think that's really important to remember. And I also remind people on social media, people typically post very positive things on there. They don't always post the negative. So again, you may not know what else they're struggling with or what else they're going through. So just because someone who you think looks young and healthy got the shot and you feel you should also be eligible, don't feel like they're gaming the system, because they very well might have a very good reason to have gotten the shot before you.
All right. I think we have our caller back on the line from Utica. Kelly, are you there?
Yeah. My concern is I'm going to represent the rural poor. Okay.
Okay.
It's this internet based access. Okay. We have no broadband in rural America. I live outside Utica. We're into strip mines here. The phone line's laying on the ground. I have spotty phone service. But as you've seen, I got cut off from you. But I do have a phone. I do have a mailbox, and I do have a vehicle, and I do pay taxes just like these other people. So I think they have the same right. And a lot of rural aged people are self-reliant. We have animals and stuff. So, you know, besides, how do I speed dial with a phone that barely works? How do I get on an internet list when I don't have the internet? And I feel like this is totally ignored because we don't have really the numbers to represent us politically in any one district. So I'd like to hear your expert address this in detail if she has the time.
Okay. Well, thank you for the call, Kelly. I wonder, Dr. Jane, if you have a response for that. I don't know if that's your area of expertise,
no.
But go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm so sorry for the struggles that the caller is facing. And I know there are people across the state who are expressing exactly that issue. We've been advocating for more ability to call in, so phone lines, so that it's not just internet-based, because that is a very big problem. Even in the urban communities, many patients do not have, or many people do not have Wi-Fi or internet or broadband. So that is a big challenge, and people are noticing this very big inequity and this gap that exists for those people. So I absolutely feel his pain through the phone, and I know I have many patients who also struggle with the same thing. So we're advocating for not only making sure that there's the opportunity for phoning in, but we're also trying to find ways to bring shots to the community. So they're talking about doing different pop-up vaccine sites in community spaces, going to churches, going to, you know, neighborhoods, going to areas that have really been hit hardest with COVID. And once the supply is there, the challenge right now, obviously, is demand is outpacing supply. Once the supply is there, the hope is that there'll be more actual outreach efforts where there's enough shots where we can have these pop-up clinics or pop-up vaccine sites across the state to really help those people who might not have internet, they might not have broadband, they might not have transportation to get where they need to go. We've also advocated for a lottery system where, you know, the information that's put in at your doctor's office, if you're somebody who's eligible, instead of you having to contact the place, you actually get a call so that you can actually be contacted when it's your turn. Again, all of that requires us to have more supply. So once the supply is there, I'm cautiously optimistic that we'll have more resources in place to reach those people. But right now, absolutely, it is a very, very big challenge. And we're seeing it across the state in many of our communities. And we're trying, and I know the state is trying, and I know there's a lot of other organizations that are trying to bridge that gap. But it is definitely a challenge. And the technology divide itself has created huge disparities across the state.
And Dr. Langchu, I'm sure you could sense the caller's frustration as well. I wonder what you would say to him and the many other people who are very frustrated with this process as it's evolved over the past few months.
Thank you for that question. And I really appreciated what Nancy Barringer shared about the moral emotions related to this and that sense of frustration of seeing others get what you're hoping for. I would say that, you know, one piece is to, as the caller, Kelly did, to reach out and talk about it, right? Talk about it with folks who can make a difference, but also to talk about it within their communities and to use their voice in terms of advocacy can give folks a sense of self-efficacy, which is so important in moving through this. And then reminding folks that there is so much that we can and have done to continue to keep themselves safe as they wait for their turn for the vaccine. And I know that that doesn't eliminate the frustration, but it can address some of the fears underlying the frustration. And that's the final thing that I would say, to continue to address the fears that are underlying the emotions that come up around the vaccine is critical.
And Dr. Langtu, just briefly to end our conversation, can you talk a little bit about hope and maybe this idea that hope is a perspective that can help us get through some of these negative emotions many of us are experiencing as we watch others get vaccinated and just get through the next couple of months until the supply finally meets the demand?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hope is so important, and I appreciate that. So much of this conversation, all of the moral emotions that come up, including the frustration and some of those other pieces, are related to our fears. You know, it's been such a challenging year, right? And we've been on the edge of our seats waiting. And I think that to take a moment to acknowledge our fears, right, to let ourselves feel our fears and name all of the emotions that have been underlying that, and then to look forward towards hope. Every day, more and more folks are actually getting vaccinated. And as we wait our turn, to remind ourselves that one, our turn is coming, and then two, that we're moving towards a brighter day, and hope can be really helpful towards looking for towards the future, but also in the moment, to know that it is getting better, it is getting lighter, and we're moving towards the light. That hope is so important. I really appreciate it that you point out the importance of hope.
Cynthia Lubin-Langtu is a professor in the Department of Clinical Psychology at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. We've also been joined by Nancy Berlinger, who's a research scholar at the Hastings Center, a bioethics research institute, and Dr. Shikha Jain, who is an assistant professor of medicine at the University of Illinois Chicago and the co-founder of IMPACT. That is all the time we have for our program today. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey.